What's up, everybody?
Welcome to the Financially Free Friday episode of the Student Loan Planner Podcast. I've got Jake with me. That wasn't my voice that just automatically went deep a minute ago. I've got Jake Courtney joining me today on the podcast episode to chat about the age-old question, right? Renting versus buying, and asking the question, is the American dream of purchasing a home all it's cracked up to be? We're going to debate it because I'm a homeowner and Jake is a renter.
That's right. We're here to be our myth busters when it comes to housing.
I've got some fun stats to kind of run through, and we're going to chat about some financially related things when it comes, well, all of this is financially related, but the different aspects of the financial pieces of purchasing a home versus renting, and really go through some considerations, some comparisons. I think comparing today's age housing market to maybe back when we were kids, when our parents were buying houses, could be kind of interesting. Because I think a lot of times millennials these days, when it comes to buying, something we'll say is, well, dang, you know, your parents or my grandparents bought a house for $40,000 and a pack of peanuts or something. And you know, now it's worth $1 million. And that's part of the conversation as well. But I'm excited to have you chat with me about it today, Jake. And Jake is on our dental planning team on the SLP Wealth team. He works with Connor, and they have their own podcast segment called Financially Free Dentists. So if you are a dentist listening, make sure to go check that one out.
Like, too. Subscribe, 5-star rating.
All the things.
After you listen to it.
Yes.
It comes out on Thursday mornings. So we'd love to have you listen and provide feedback.
Perfect. Let's get into some home ownership rates and demographics. I think that's a good place to jump in. So the national home ownership rate right now is approximately 66% of U.S. households own their homes, while about 34% rent. That is a sourced from a place called Doorloop. Who knows if that's, you know, as super accurate, but
sounds legit. Sounds legit, yeah. Megan.
Sounds legit. Same source also has the age factor of home ownership increasing with age, which makes sense. So over 70% of homeowners are over the age of 45, while half of renters are under the age of 45. And the median age for a homeowner is about 56. I think that makes sense. Like, most folks could probably say, like, their parents or aunts and uncles or grandparents are homeowners versus renters. Like, if you were looking at the majority of what your family makeup is, and the average, or sorry, median age for renters is about 39. Some financial considerations. Household income. This is a big topic as well, because your income goes into the affordability conversation when it comes to being able to have a mortgage and get approved for a good mortgage. And so the median household income right now for homeowners is about $78,000 compared to the median for renters, which is $41,000, which that's from the Census Bureau. Some housing market trends. I'm just going to kind of run through these stats because I want to get to the meat and potatoes. But home prices as of November 2024, so just a couple months ago, the average home value in the United States was about $357,000, and that was about a 2.5% increase from last year. We've seen some interesting trends over the past 5 years with housing. 2.5% is back to kind of normal. I think historically it was like 3-ish percent year over year, the value of your home would grow. So we're maybe getting back to normal here, but that was according to Zillow. I thought it would be fun to really break down the cost of ownership between purchasing in 1990. Jake, when were you born? What year?
91.
Gotcha. I was 92. So we're 90 babies.
Yep.
So this would have been our parents, you know, purchasing back in the day. I've got some stats from 2023. So just a couple of years ago. Let's talk about the shift, or if there is a shift, in affordability. So in 1990, there was a median home price of approximately $149,000 at that time, according to TimeTrex. And the median household income around that time was about almost $30,000, which is pretty interesting. $30,000 is, you know, thinking about that as an income now is tight. That's like poverty level based on the U.S. poverty line deductions. That was a resource from the Visual Capitalist. So that means price-to-income ratio, when we're going off of those median prices, was about 5-to-1, meaning homes cost about 5 times the median annual household income. Let's get into 2023. let's see what it looks like for 2023.
It's going to be bigger numbers, right? Yeah.
There's going to be bigger numbers here. The median home price in 2023 was approximately $416,000, just over $416,000. Median household income was about $80,600. Okay. So doing the math on that, price to income ratio is about 5.2, almost 5.1, indicating that there's a slight increase in multiple compared to 1990, but not by that much, right?
Right. And with just the commentary about how home prices have skyrocketed, I mean, we saw it really 2021 was like the year, late 2020 was the year where everything pretty much took off when interest rates dropped. So I was expecting a way higher price to income ratio.
Mm-hmm. And again, these are medians. So there's going to be folks all over the place, like in areas all over the place. But I thought this was pretty interesting from like a US perspective, like the median, like not average, it's not average, but the median levels are about the same. So again, that ratio is 5 to 1 compared to 5.2 to 1. So really darn close. But there's a lot of stuff that goes into this. It's not just about the income. It's not just about the price tag. There's some other things that go into it as well. And I think you had some stuff that you wanted to chat about there.
One of those things is obviously the location. We saw specific areas in 2021 really blow up. We had a lot of folks moving from maybe more northeastern, you know, states down south, out west. And those places in the South and the West really blew up. You could obviously contribute that to working from home. And, you know, if people are working remotely, then they don't need to be in a high cost of living area, all of those things, right? There's a stat called the price to rent ratio. Let's first talk about the cost of home ownership and then the cost of renting. And then we'll talk about why the price to rent ratio matters depending on where you live. First, cost of home ownership is obviously the sticker price, right? So we have your mortgage, which is consisting of principal and interest. And then we also have homeowner's insurance that is typically required if you have a mortgage on the property. And then you also have property tax. And that can obviously vary where you're at, right? So those are basically the minimum amounts that you're going to pay as a homeowner. The phantom costs are landscaping, yard treatment,
pest control,
the HVAC goes out.
Yeah, HVAC.
All of these things that you don't think about because they kind of trickle through as you own your home, that when people are looking at the kind of the price tag of a home and their mortgage payment on that home comparing to renting, they're saying, hey, you know, it makes a lot of sense to own the home. Versus the other side of the equation is renting. That is very transparent, very straightforward. You pay your monthly rent. Yes, there might be fees here and there, like pet fees. And, you know, you might not get back your security deposit if the carpet's torn up from your pet or something like that. But either way, it's much more stable, right? It's much more known. And there's just not as many surprises involved.
I could tell you a couple of things that I've had to do because I bought our home in 2021. When rates were still really nice. So I'm still happy about going in and purchasing at that time, even though prices at that time were high and we did have bidding wars, which was stressful. Oh my gosh. Mm. But since then, so, you know, purchasing a home, you're absolutely right. There's all these other expenses that you have to take into account that you would never have to take into account when it comes to renting. So we do pay pest control. We have lawn maintenance, because, you know, we have an HOA. So if that's not looking good, we're going to get fines. So that's another thing, HOA, you're going to get either fines from HOA if you're not doing what you need to be doing, or you have HOA dues anyways. You don't have that with renting. We had a garage door spring break that we had to replace. And then we ended up having to do all the little wheels that like go up the garage door. We currently have our air conditioning unit giving us trouble downstairs. So we're going to have to replace that this year. Waiting another month or so before we get into the summer, but closer to the season. And we had a water bust in our front yard, a water pipeline from the main line from the road, because we're on city water, city sewer. So we have a pipe that goes from the street to our home where water comes into the house. And we had a crack And our water bill, Jake, oh my gosh. So you see numbers all the time. We had a water bill for, I think it was like $400 in a month, where water bills are typically like $30 to $100 a month for maybe like a family of five, and we're a family of two. And it was all just seeping into the ground in the front yard. So our lawn looks great, but our budget for that category was blown, and it eventually busted.
And then you had to pay a plumbing company to come out and dig up that pipe and replace it and all of that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So while I love the decision we made to buy, because we're going to be here for a long time, and we're in Georgia. So actually, I looked up our property taxes here in Georgia. We're up at about 0.72% of the home's assessed value, which is very low compared to other states. New Jersey's like average property tax rate is like 2.47%. That's the highest. So New Jersey's got some high property taxes out there. But, you know, those are just like some of the expenses that you would not have to pay when you're renting. You do have to pay when you're a homeowner, that have to be factored into your emergency fund or kind of your house maintenance fund when it comes to budget.
Yeah. And Megan, I'm curious, like when you're talking with clients, how do you go about affordability of a house, knowing that all of those things can happen if you're a homeowner?
Yeah, there's a couple of different ways. So I do love doing mock cash flows to model out, like, what's the mortgage, the PTIT going to look like, you know, principal, interest, taxes, insurance. So we want to make sure that fits into the budget, of course. But then you could do it by a percentage, like a percentage of the home value, to give you like a ballpark of how much to set aside in savings each month for like home maintenance stuff. That's sometimes a good way to go about it, or kind of round up to a flat number. But that's what we'll usually do, is kind of bake in some room for some added expenses that weren't factored in with rent.
Yeah. And just overall, I think whether you're buying or renting, we want to keep that housing ratio, which is basically your total housing costs. That's on paper housing costs, not the all the things you have to replace and fix and everything like that, but just the on paper, the petty costs there that you talked about. We want to keep that. I like to see 25% or below, but some areas, high cost of living areas, it's hard to do that if you're a homeowner.
Yeah, be closer to like 30%, which 30% for housing, like that gets tough, because that's a lot of your income going towards housing. And so I saw a TikTok or a reel the other day where it was somebody took a video of them like enjoying their mortgage. It was like, that's what it was. It was like, what are you doing this weekend? And he's like, I'm enjoying my mortgage, you know, just sitting in the front room drinking wine, you know, laying on the back deck. And that's like legit part of the conversation when, you know, when we're talking to clients too, like, look, this is going to be a lifestyle change from rent. You're going to want to mentally think about this as like part of your entertainment as well, if we're increasing our expenses here.
That's right.
But I love that. I was like, that's great. I'm going to say that now. I'm enjoying my mortgage.
I'm not being lazy. I'm just enjoying my mortgage.
Yeah. But you are on the reverse side, Jake, because you are renting and you don't have to deal with any of these headaches, right?
Supposedly, I am throwing away money, right? Right, Megan?
Yeah, supposedly,
that's what the consensus is of renting. So there's something called a price to rent ratio, and that is based on where you're at. There's definitely circumstances that it makes sense to rent. There's definitely circumstances to make sense to buy. And one of those circumstances is where you live. And it's a crazy difference here. I got this from Clever Real Estate. It's a website that says listwithclever.com. And they listed the price to rent ratios in 2024. And all the price to rent ratio is the median price of a home in the area divided by the median annual rent for a rental in the area, a rental house. So thinking about that, the lowest price to rent ratio is Cleveland, Ohio, of the top 50 metro areas.
Where did you come from? Where'd you come from, Jake?
I came from Ohio, but not Cleveland.
Got it.
It was still very low price to rent ratio. And then the highest is San Jose, California at 37.6. Cleveland is 11. So it's just crazy. And why does that number matter? The reason why that matters is that the lower the price to income ratio, the lower the housing prices compared to the rent in the same area, the more it tends to make sense to purchase a home versus renting. And there's other things that will factor in, of course, but just in general, that's what it means. The higher, the more it makes sense to rent the same home or the same type of home in the area. And just to kind of think about this, I'm going to apply some numbers to this. Let's say we have a house in Ohio that has a 12 price to rent ratio. So I said, let's have about a $600,000 house, and that 12 price to rent ratio, the rent for that same type of house would be $4,000 a month. If you bought the house, even at a 7% interest rate, and we apply some assumptions with property taxes and homeowners insurance in terms of just percent of purchase price of that house, if you bought the house, your total mortgage payment would be about $3,800 or so. Mm. And you could rent the house for $4,000. So even at 7%, just from a pure cash flow perspective, in Ohio, you pay less if you own the home in the first month. Mm-hmm. Yes, $390 of that is going to principal. Only $390. The rest of that is considered a basically sunk cost because it's not adding any equity. But you also are seeing your equity grow in your house. On the other side, the flip side.
I want to know those numbers.
San Diego, California. Now, I used even lower price to rent ratio than what it says on here, 24. I used 20. So a $2 million home, which is about the price of a home in San Diego for three bedrooms, 2,000 square feet, three bedroom. It's an $8,000 rent for that same house that's $2 million. So if we bought the house, same factors, right? 7% interest rate, same percent for property tax, homeowners insurance. We bought the house, our housing payment would be about $12,700 for a month for the first month compared to the rent of $8,000. So it costs, just from a cash flow perspective, $4,000 more per month to buy the house in San Diego because of that high price to rent ratio.
That's pretty fascinating. And that's why, especially in California in general, like affordability is really hard, or the math is hard to make sense for purchasing. Sometimes we get caught up in like averages or medians, just like we were literally just talking about, where you might graduate, have a great job, make great income, but the location that you live in is just not awesome for purchasing. And you might think that like, oh, well, that's my next step. That's what's going to make me like, you know, that is the next step in my financial planning journey. That's a smart move. Everyone says to not throw money away with renting. But depending on your area, mathematically, it may not make sense unless, you know, what would be a reason you'd argue for buying in an area like that?
Yeah. The reason why you'd want to buy in a place like that is, one, if you had a lot of upfront cash, right? So if you put a lot down on the house and you didn't have to pay a lot of interest on the house. And two, you plan on living there for a while, because the longer you live there, the more principal you pay on your mortgage, the more equity you build in your house, and then you tend to see the value of your home increase. And there is certain break-even points, depending on interest rates, of how long you live there and if it makes sense to buy or rent if you're going to live there for that long. If anybody wants to know the numbers in their unique situation, we have an awesome calculator on studentloanplanner.com. It's the rent versus buy calculator. And we primarily use it for residents because, you know, they're in residency for 2, 3, 4 years, whatever it might be. They're like, should I buy a home? Should I rent the home because I'm only going to be here for a few years? That's a way that you can go in and crunch the numbers there. Typically, if you're going to live there a long time, it makes a lot more sense to buy because of the equity growing in your asset there.
Right. And then having the cash up front to have maybe a lower mortgage, lower payment overall, that could be helpful. Where if you're living in somewhere like Cleveland, Ohio, maybe you don't need to prioritize putting a ton of money down. Maybe you just put like the minimum for that required loan, like a conventional, I think, is like 3.5% down. Other loans, you can get 3% down, as low as 3% down. If you have a physician mortgage, maybe it's as low as zero down. You know, maybe you have more flexibility to where that financially makes sense, you know, not having to put a ton of cash down at first in those lower cost of living areas, or the lower price. Is it lower price in price to?
Yeah, lower price to rent ratio. And the primary reason why it makes sense the longer you live there is because a lot of people don't realize this, because a lot of people just haven't sold a home, but you typically have to pay 6%. Commission to realtors. Now that might be changing with some laws that have gone into place with the realtor commission, but either way, you typically have to pay 6% on the back end of the price of the sale of the house. I had just sold a house last year. I was pumped about, everybody bid above asking. I was like, man, this is great. And then by the time it landed in my bank account, I'm like, where the heck did all this money go?
Yeah.
I thought I was getting this much, right? And so that's why it's so important, because if you think about like the bookend cost to, number one, buying a home, there's title fees, there's all these line item fees that you get when you buy a home. Usually it's about like, let's say 1% of the value, and that's typically fixed a lot of times. But on the back end, we've got 6% of the value. The longer you live there, the more you can kind of amortize that cost. You can divide that cost up by per year what you're paying, right? So if you're only going to be there for 3 years and you paid $50,000 in closing costs, you effectively paid $16,000 per year and above and beyond your interest, your mm-hmm. property tax, all of that, because you lived there for such a short amount of time.
Mm-hmm. You know, when it comes to this decision, rent versus buy, I think there are a number of factors to consider. First would be lifestyle goals. Let's talk about that a bit. Do you want the freedom to be able to relocate, or do you prefer to have permanent roots somewhere? I mean, in our decision, we wanted to have permanent roots somewhere and we planned to be here for a long time. But I could see another situation where, you know, maybe my job made me travel, or there was the opportunity to maybe travel, or maybe I'm going through training like in residency and I don't exactly know where I'm going to be in 3 years. So I need the freedom to be able to relocate, or that's just my lifestyle. You know, you have to ask yourself those questions. Like, do you want a little more freedom, or do you want to be permanently hunkered down somewhere, you know, semi-permanently? Nothing's
right.
Totally permanent, but you know what I mean?
Yeah. As much as realtors or real estate agents want you to think that buying a home is an investment, it's a lifestyle choice. Like you mentioned, Megan, it's net-net, even with the housing boom we experienced in 2021, most folks, even just looking at the price of the home versus what they bought it for versus sold it through, you mentioned like parents, grandparents that kept their home for 30, 40 years, and they've made a ton of money on the equity. They also paid for things along the way, renovations. They redid the floor. They all of these things happen along the way that you don't see when you see the purchase versus sale price, right? So there's a lot to think about there.
It is a different work environment these days now too, because our grandparents would stay at one company or two companies for their whole life, and then they'd retire with a pension and you know, go into retirement comfortably. That's not the case these days. Like, it is common and it's encouraged sometimes to make job changes for you and your spouse. So if your spouse has a job change, that means you might have to have a job change too if you're moving as well. So things are just a little different, where like, it's not as common for someone to stay in the same place as long as maybe your grandparents, if you think
about
it.
That's right. Yeah. Living right next to your big corporate office that you've mm-hmm. worked at for 30 years is just not as common anymore.
Yeah. So lifestyle goals, that's one thing to think about. Time horizon, we've touched on that quite a bit. How long are you going to be staying in this location? And there is a math equation to figure out how long, like, where's that break-even point compared to renting versus buying when it comes into like factoring in the costs associated with buying. Market trends. So market trends can certainly encourage or dissuade someone from getting into purchasing a home or getting into the desired area you want to live in. I know for us, like 2021, I was looking at those rates like, okay, I think this is it. I think we should do it. 2020 was like, you know, a really crazy bad year with COVID, of course. 2021, we were getting back on our feet, and market trends can certainly have an impact. And then, like you were saying, folks are moving from different cities to other cities. So moving out west, or moving from California to other, you know, to the Midwest. We saw a lot of California folks relocate to like Colorado. Some of those are more like outdoorsy states. Northern folks moving down, Chicago or New York City, moving down to like a slower type city like Atlanta, yeah. A little bit.
Or Knoxville, Tennessee.
Yeah. I was going to say, you made a relocated move.
Yeah. Which, by the way, the price to rent ratio in Knoxville is like 14, 15. So it's really low, right?
I was going to say.
Atlanta's got to be there.
Pretty good.
Pretty close to. Maybe Metro Atlanta's a little bit higher. But.
Yeah. You're definitely going to have us beat, though, in Tennessee. And I looked up Tennessee's property tax rate, approximately 0.48%, lower than Georgia.
Right.
So if you want to buy in Tennessee, hey, you also don't have state tax.
That's
so
right.
You're saving some taxes out
However,
there.
The sales tax is either 9 or 10%.
Yeah. I think y'all tax alcohol or liquor more as well. Yeah.
It all kind of breaks even, but just in general, like, you know, let's remind people, like, taxes are an incentive mechanism for people, right? So taxes are a way for people to act in a certain way. And so, for example, Florida has no state income tax, but they have high property tax. At least, Megan, you probably have seen that. The reason being is they want to attract retirees that don't have a lot of income. Retirees don't have a lot of earned income, but they have a lot of equity that they are investments that they can move to buy a house. And so guess what? That's who they attract. So that's the way you have to kind of think about that.
Yeah, great point. Because property taxes, they fund the local services in the area too, including like public education, infrastructure in general. Mm-hmm. So an interesting stat, New Hampshire and Texas depend heavily on property tax. Texas is up there for property tax. I know that's something to take into account if you're moving to one of those really high property tax states. Like, it may not be, and it's never, right, an apples to apples comparison, mm-hmm. but something to take into account along with some other factors with the area you might be moving to. Two other things on like factors to consider when you're considering rent versus buy: financial stability. This is really important. This is what we talk a lot about with our clients. Having emergency savings, having the ability to save for unpredictable costs that come along with homeownership, having stable income. Do you see a lot of, or do you have a lot of those conversations too?
Yeah.
I'm guessing
you do. So one thing I run into all the time is someone purchases a dental practice, because I work with a lot of dentists, obviously. They want to buy a place that's near the practice they just purchased. It is a lot harder to qualify for a mortgage versus qualifying for rent, especially if you just bought a business, because they want to see some proof of income. And if you just bought the practice, you didn't have that proof of income. And so that's one other factor is like, yeah, if you just started at a job or you just started a business or acquired a business and you just don't have the income history, but you also don't want to commute for an hour from the last place you lived and you want to move right next to your business, it makes a ton of sense to rent at that point, because quite literally you cannot buy without that income documentation.
Right. Yeah. They need like a year or 2 years at minimum, I think, if you're a new practice owner. Is that what they're looking for typically?
About 2 years of tax returns that show that business income, which we can get into a whole rabbit hole about deducting taxable income for business owners, because that can be a bad thing when you're trying to apply for a mortgage.
Yeah. There's that balance, that sweet balance where you have to like show enough income to get approved for the mortgage that you want, but also be smart about your taxes and showing, you know, adjusted gross income for saving
taxes.
Yeah. So there's that sweet balance.
It's complex. There's just a lot to think about when it comes to that decision.
Yeah. And in those cases, it might be better to purchase a home before the practice. Is
typically
that right?
If they have a little bit of runway, it does make sense to do that, because you have your associate like W-2 income. Which, by the way, if you get paid as a W-2 employee, that's like the gold standard when it comes to mortgage approval, right? Because they see all you really need. I haven't purchased a home in 5 years, but they really just need pay stubs for the past 90 days, I think it is, or something like that.
Yeah, for W-2, yeah. But for business owners, it's like they want tax returns, they want P&Ls, they want bank statements, they want a lot to prove that that business is up and running and doing what you're saying you're making an income.
Yeah.
It's not impossible, but it is more involved, basically.
Right.
That was the case for us. So my husband and I are both business owners. We both have S corporations. And so they needed to see 2 years of business returns. And what they did is they averaged the two. So we had a lower income year and then a higher income year, and they would just average the two together to get to our affordability number for how much they would approve us for, which was interesting. But they wanted bank statements to make sure that we were still receiving about the same income per month from what they were averaging.
And keep in mind, for those that are listening and going through the first process of purchasing their first home, just because a bank approves you for a mortgage amount doesn't mean you should max out the approved amount. We talked about housing ratio, which is housing payment divided by gross income, 25-30%, keep it below that number. They're going to approve you for a lot more than that. But we don't want you to be the first of every month, just feel like you're playing catch up the rest of the month for your cash on hand because you just made a massive mortgage payment compared to the income you have coming in.
Yep. That's smart. So, fun story, in SLP Wealth, we do have a mortgage broker turned financial planner. His name is David. All of us planners on the SLP Wealth team, if we have a client who's looking to buy, we'll send them over to David for a consultation, or, you know, part of their financial planning membership, a conversation about numbers when it comes to mortgages. So that's been really fun to have incorporated into our planning, because he comes with all that background knowledge of, you know, how to qualify for the mortgage, what you need to be thinking about, like what your ramp up to actually getting the pre-approval should be. That's been a really lovely addition. We'll have to have David on soon to get more technical with some of the mortgage stuff.
That's right. David's awesome. He's an awesome resource for us because none of us come from the mortgage background. So it's really nice to be able to ping David for a question about some weird mortgage that a client has. So,
right. Well, good. So food for thought, things for folks to consider. You know, location matters. That's not a secret. I think folks knew that. But I think also putting some numbers into perspective, like today's market, depending on where you live, could be very similar to what our parents were experiencing. Of course, there's going to be different areas that are more expensive. There's going to be areas that are way less expensive than what we were chatting about, that ratio that we were chatting about. And student loans are a bigger part of your life than they probably were of your parents' lives. So having the right student loan plan in place is crucial to make sure that home affordability, rent affordability is there and it's working within your budget as well. So stay tuned for more episodes on student loan stuff, of course. But how do you want to close this out, Jake?
Yeah.
Since you started.
I'll just kind of cap it off with just some advice of be patient with the process of purchasing a home. Don't rush into a home. For some folks, for most folks, it's the largest purchase of their life. And so be patient with the process, run the numbers, use calculators online, use our SLP calculators when it comes to renting versus buying, and just know your numbers and let those kind of make that determination outside of the lifestyle choices.
Perfect. Well, I hope everyone has a lovely weekend coming up, and we will catch you on the next one. Thank you, Jake.
Thank you, Megan.
What if you could get fiduciary financial planning specific to your profession that's student loan aware that could change your life for a price much better than you ever dreamed possible? If that sounds good to you, go to slpwealth.com/pod for a free, no obligation, 15-minute intro call with one of our own fiduciary financial planners to see if we could be a good fit for you. This podcast is for informational, educational, and entertainment purposes only and should not be considered individualized investment advice. If a specific investment is mentioned, do not consider it a recommendation to buy or sell the investment. Seek first advice from a financial professional before implementing any strategies discussed. All investments involve risk, and past performance does not guarantee future results. Yay, compliance.